Hey, welcome back to Women's Wellness Radio. I'm your hostess with the mostest, Bridget Danner. Welcome back to another week of wonderful health information brought to you by some of the coolest, friendliest experts that I meet and that I find online and just have the pleasure of knowing. So our guest today is a longtime friend and colleague of mine, Jeevani Lucy Eigen. Welcome.
Thank you, Bridget.
Yes.
What a treat. I'm looking forward to talking to you about this.
Oh, yeah. We've had many interesting conversations throughout our friendship. And this will be another one. So I'm going to give a little background on you. And just as a preview of coming events, we are going to be talking about Ayurvedic theory today, which I know very little about, so I'm very excited to learn, and I think you will be too. Such an ancient system of healing, so much to know, so just getting a little teaser today. So I was a coworker of Jeevani Eigen, let's see, probably 11 years ago now, and I think we were both first moving to Portland, Oregon. By the time I met her, she had but in the corporate world and then become a body worker and then became trained in cranial sacral therapies and somato emotional release therapies. Meanwhile, being really in depth studying Indian philosophy and yoga. And then since I've known her, she's gone back to study Ayurveda, which she can tell us more about her training. So she's really bringing a lot of rich layers of knowledge into this knowledge of Ayurveda and what she brings to her clients. So super cool. We're really lucky to have her on here. Jeevani, we tell our listeners a little bit more about your more recent Ayurvedic education?
Yes, sure. So I went to Dr. Vasant Lad School in Albuquerque, New Mexico, the Ayurvedic Institute, and it was absolutely phenomenal. He is dedicated to making sure that people who come to his school really get an education that is balanced, and balanced the way Ayurveda is balanced, balanced for body, mind, and spirit. And this is one reason why I went to his school. The program that I went to, it was a 9-month program, and it allows me to be an Ayurvedic health practitioner. And, excuse me, in order to be an Ayurvedic physician, for instance, you would have to go to medical school in this country and then also go to India to get a PhD in Ayurveda. I don't believe, to my knowledge, that there's an Ayurveda physician program yet in this country. Mm. So, but in order to practice in this country as a physician, of course, you would have to go to medical school. So my education included studying philosophy and Ayurvedic theory, herbs, Ayurveda and yoga, and then doing practicums as well.
Okay, great. And you've had a long interest in Ayurveda. You've been to India multiple times. You could go to different yoga retreats and centers. You know, one thing I've found interesting in the U.S. is we have a really strong interest in yoga. Including myself, I've been practicing yoga probably for 12 years, and yet I know very little about Ayurveda. I know very little about the history of Indian medicine. So it's interesting. Why do you think that that's developed that way in the U.S., and do you think that's shifting?
I do think it's shifting, and I think it's shifting because we're learning more and more about how yoga can be a therapy. And then that opens the door for us to look more deeply into ancient Indian philosophies of healing. And then, of course, yoga is used in Ayurveda as part of a protocol for healing purposes. So it's almost like a circle that we're getting more and more knowledgeable about yoga And we went from a practice of yoga, and now we've got these programs that are offering yoga therapy, which naturally brings in ways of eating in addition to how we're handling our bodies. And so that's how Ayurveda comes in, I think.
Okay. Yeah, in a way, it's a bit similar to Chinese medicine and how we've really latched on to acupuncture in this country with a little less interest in some of the other branches of medicine. But yeah, maybe it's all good. You know, it's obviously a big change to have something come across to our modern culture and, you know, figuring out how to embrace it. So yeah, maybe it's just the natural progression of things. We've got to start somewhere.
It is a big change. And I do have to say that based on the experiences I've had, not only in school, but also with clients, is that Ayurveda, if you're going to implement Ayurveda into your life, then it does ask of you to change perhaps social, the way you have social interactions. It can change how and when you exercise. It can change your eating patterns and also what you eat. It can change how you, excuse me, how you practice a spiritual practice, meaning whether you have one or you don't have one, or you meditate or you don't meditate. It may invite you to do that. So it is a way of life. It's a lifestyle. You can certainly gain the benefits of Ayurveda by just implementing one or two things for sure. But if you implement it in more than one area of your life, the benefits that you reap can be enormous.
Okay. Cool. Well, let's start from the very beginning. What is Ayurveda? Okay. Let's define it.
Okay. So Ayurveda is a system of healing that comes out of India, as we've said before. It's been used for thousands and thousands of years. And I believe today in India, it's used side by side with allopathic medicine, with the traditional medicine that we know in this country. And the purpose of it, Ayurveda actually means the science of life. Ayu means life. And Veda means knowledge. And so it starts with a paradigm of what life is. And life, according to Ayurveda, and Ayurveda, by the way, is governed by ancient teachings and writings by several physicians, but three primary ones in particular. And still today, those sutras of those writings are still used to guide traditional Ayurveda. So Ayurveda really starts with a concept of what is life. And life, according to Ayurveda, is the body, mind, and consciousness or spirit working together in order to maintain a balance and a harmony. So balance is a key concept in Ayurveda. And it also is unique in that every single person is viewed as unique and individual. So even though we have some guiding principles of Ayurveda, and we're going to talk about one important theory in particular that's foundational for Ayurveda, the Tridoshic theory, it's important to know that we're going to apply this person by person.
Okay. Yeah, so this tridoshic theory, tell us more about that. I think there's a few terms and a little bit in there, which is maybe if you know a little bit about Ayurveda, there's probably some of this stuff. Because that's kind of the terms you hear tossed around in popular culture. So yeah, just get us started on this tridoshic theory.
Okay. So a lot of people may know the three types of doshas that are, tri means three, so tridoshic theory. And they are termed vata, pitta, and kapha. And usually I have found that when I hear that term used, those terms used here in this country, we really are applying it to, as I mentioned before, individuals or us as individuals or to our own human bodies and human systems. But as a theory for Ayurveda, it's important to know that this theory, these three doshas, are subtle energies that are composed of the elements that make up the manifested universe. So the elements, air, ether, fire, water, and earth, are combined together with the predominance of one or two of the elements to form these doshas. So the doshas are what I would call functional units that serve a number of purposes for us, and they're also known by certain attributes and qualities. Does that make sense?
Yeah, maybe it'll kind of gel once we describe each dosha a little bit more. But yeah, it seems like in many traditions, there's the idea of the elements as being a basis for medicine. Yeah. Even I've been reading a book right now, and they talk about pre-modern medicine in Europe, and they have this, some of the same things, you know, the heat and the humors. And, you know, part of it, I think, is just we have to look at nature. We're part of nature, and we're human animals living in nature, especially when you think of thousands of years ago, we're probably living so much closer to nature. So I think that those, in many cultures, those first concepts of elements and how they affect us did become the basis for medical theory, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that it's important to note that in that regard, as well as in Ayurveda, this gives us an indication of whether or not we're in balance, that's how we use the doshas, how we're out of balance, what protocols we need to use in order to correct the imbalance, and then it guides us in progress along this path of healing. So what that tells us is the doshas are governing us in an organizational way within our bodies, but also it's governing outside the body. So I'm talking in terms of seasons, times of day, location. Different locations have different doshic types. And then also stages of our lives. So if we took one of the doshas, for instance, Vata dosha, it's composed of primarily two elements, because everything in the universe is made up of all five elements with a predominance of, in the case of the doshas, one or two. So Vata is composed of air and ether, and its primary importance, its primary function in the universe is movement. Pitta is composed primarily of fire and water, and its primary importance is transformation. So transformation, if you look at it and from the standpoint of the human body, transformation would be digestion, assimilation of nutrition, and movement. Vata would help with the movement of the nutrition through the digestive system and out to where it's needed in the body for health, for preventative maintenance, or for healing purposes.
Okay.
And then the third, yep. And then the third doshic type is Kapha, and it's made up primarily of earth and water. And its importance and its function is lubrication and structure. So if we look at that in terms of the human body, each one of our bodies, lubrication, it helps to really lubricate the joints and also provide structure. So the structure would be like the skeletal system, for instance.
Okay. So I was very curious about how you said times of the day and times of the life. Can you give some examples about how these doshas, you know, fit in with that?
Yes. So if you know that Vata has certain attributes, and so it's made up of air and ether primarily, and then it's got attributes that indicate its existence, because these are very, very subtle energies. In fact, these are subtle energies that give us indications as to whether or not we're predisposed for illness, dis-ease, or some sort of challenge on the level of body, mind, or spirit. So Vata's attributes are categorically dry, light, cold, rough, subtle, and mobile, and clear as well. So a season of the year that would be dominated by Vata would be fall, because in the fall, things start to get dry. There's a lot of movement. It can be very windy depending upon where you are. And the leaves fall off the trees and they shrivel up and turn brown. So this is an indication of Vata being predominant in our season. And, I know. It's pretty interesting. So Pitta, the two primary elements are fire and water. And one of the primary attributes of Pitta is hotness. So what season would you think would be predominantly Pitta?
I suppose that'd be summer.
Exactly. So some things, if you know the attributes of the doshas, you can start to look at the universe through the eyes of Ayurveda. And kapha is earth and water. And its attributes are heavy, slow, cold, oily, slimy, dense, soft, cloudy. So the season of the year that would have a lot of these attributes would be winter, right? The dead of winter. Not everywhere, but the traditional winter that you think of. And then also in the spring, when things start defrosting and they get, it's still kind of cold, but things are starting to become more liquidy. That's okay. Also a cup of time. Yeah.
It's interesting. You know, in Chinese medicine, they have five seasons. So I guess everybody didn't get together and decide on how many seasons there were in the beginning. This is kind of
there are some similarities, because there's a system of body work that's used in Ayurveda called Marma point therapy. And in Chinese medicine, don't you have shiatsu, or you certainly got the points along the meridians?
Yeah, shiatsu is a bit more of like a Japanese manifestation. In Chinese medicine, we call like a tui na, is like a massaging the point. So, yeah, it's just every culture kind of has its, they interweave in some ways and then they kind of depart in other ways. So it's interesting. Okay, so we've got some of the ideas that these doshas are kind of ruling seasons of our life or seasons of the year, times of day. How does it start to affect our bodies?
Yes. So if we take a look at our doshas as defining us as I would say that the way you would initially look at it is that you come into the world with a certain set of predominant doshas, like I'm a Vata Pitta. So I'm primarily Vata with some strong characteristics of Pitta and underlying characteristics of Kapha. And that means I have physical characteristics, personality characteristics, and a predisposition for certain sorts of conditions based upon these qualities that I mentioned earlier. So, for instance, if there are some tests that you can actually find online that you can check and see if you're which dosha you're predominantly. And let me just give you a list of things just to answer your question. So let's say we're going to look at body size, body weight, hair, and skin to start defining what a vata or a pitta or a kapha look like.
Okay.
So body size, a vata is very slim, maybe tall, maybe not tall. A pitta is a medium build, and a kapha is a larger, what we may call big bone type of person. A vata person may have a low weight for their height and their size. A pitta person would have that medium build, some muscle, but not overly muscular. A kapha person could be very muscular, but also could possibly be overweight. And the skin for a vata person can be dry, possibly rough, possibly sort of thin. A pitta person could have smooth, oily, warm, rosy skin. And a kapha would have that sort of Madonna skin from the ancient works of art, where they have beautiful, pale, white skin. And the kapha also for the hair would be thick and curly and luxurious. The pitta may have, blonde hair or red hair. Baldness is also an indication of pitta. Hair may be straight. And then a vata may just have sort of a medium brown color, could be curly haired or also may be dry, because that's one of the qualities. And then the eyes, just to give you another example, a kapha's eyes are big and beautiful. They may be blue. They may indicate love and caring. A pitta may look, the eyes may be green or gray or yellow, but very sharp and very bright and also sensitive to light. And a vata may have smaller eyes. They may move around a lot, dart around a bit, and they may be black or brown. Now, there are always exceptions to these stereotypical examples, but there are enough people who fall in these different types that you can indeed use them as guidelines.
Okay.
So, yeah. Can I give you some more characteristics of each one of these?
Yeah, I think that people are probably finding it fascinating to try to figure out where they might fit in. So let's keep going.
Yes. So let me tell you a little bit about personality. A vata person, and again, the vata, in the universe, the vata governs movement. So a vata person may love to travel, and they might like to move. And they can make changes easily, and they can be very flexible. Vatas tend to be creative and enthusiastic, and their minds can be quick. And they also are very, very good networkers.
Okay.
The challenges of a vata person would be, it may be difficult to set boundaries, and they like to move around a lot, so they can get distracted and they can sometimes struggle with focus. Now, this isn't true of every single vata. If you have a vata that also has sort of a grounded aspect to them, then they won't have trouble doing these things, but it just gives you an idea. They really like to have exciting lives, and consequently, they can also get overwhelmed. They can also go, and then crash. Like lots and lots and lots of movement, and then all of a sudden, everything stops. So vatas need to take good care of their adrenal system. Mm. Pitta was the medium build. and medium muscularity. Pittas are about transformation, and they can be very intelligent. They can have very clear mind. They can love learning. They can love to gain knowledge and information and then put it to use. So these people are very good resources. So they can be organized, they can be efficient, and they can be very independent, which means, for instance, they could be great coordinators of projects, and they can also be great leaders because they can be they can radiate confidence, and they can be very inspiring and very motivational, as well as very detail oriented. A challenge to a Pitta is that if they're not leading or they're not in charge, they have a really hard time surrendering or letting go to whoever is in charge. And I think that you, if you're in a group, if you just, anyone listening, if you've been in a group of people, you can tell who the creative and the visionary is and who the one is who can get things done and stay focused. And then we haven't talked about Kapha yet, but the Kaphas are very loving and very grounded and very stable, and they may not work fast, but they can work diligently, and they have a great deal of endurance. Mm. And Kaphas love to create their homes, and they love comfort, and they're very nourishing to be around, and also sort of hold the space for expression of emotions, which I think is really important. A challenge for a Kapha is if they're under time pressure, can be very difficult for them. They like to work at their own pace. And if they're in a situation where, for instance, emotions are being stifled, this can be difficult for them. But they're very loyal, very stable, and can really be depended upon. Does that give you an idea about the three different types?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I've got a couple questions. So now that you know this theory pretty well, do you feel like with a new client, you pretty quickly can assess, you know, if they're mostly this and some of this and that kind of thing?
That is a very good question, because when someone comes to see you as an Ayurvedic practitioner, they have something that they feel like is out of balance. And you need to be careful to not make a quick decision about someone. So I have tools that I use. I have a very detailed questionnaire that I use, and we go through someone's lifestyle, eating patterns, elimination patterns, sleep patterns, what their emotional state is. I observe the way they hold their bodies, the way they talk to me. There are certain indications on one's face about what kind of issues potentially they are facing. I do a tongue diagnosis. I take pulse. And I ask a lot of other questions as well, just to avoid making a quick decision. Mm. So that's why I say that these things that I'm telling you right now are stereotypical in nature and true in nature. And Ayurveda is about diagnosing and working with someone as an individual. Therefore, anything that you recommend to someone is usually customized.
Okay, that makes sense. And I've got a bit of a left field question for you. So if you can't answer, okay. It's okay. But I'm just curious, you know, there's all these wonderful sutra stories and legends. Is there a kind of a theory about why we're born with a certain dosha?
Well, that is a good question. In Ayurveda, so Ayurveda is very spiritual in nature. And as a result, reincarnation is part of that possibility. And I say it this way because I don't know how every Ayurvedic practitioner feels about that, but there is a theory and a philosophy called Samkhya philosophy that involves this concept. So you can be influenced through your past lives. You can be influenced by your parents' lives. You can be influenced by the environment and the situation during, at your conception, during your time in the womb, as well as what happens when you come out.
Okay. Well, that all makes sense. And you could kind of marry that with other theories, you know, about genetics and epigenetics. And
yes.
So
Ayurveda doesn't separate itself from other types of healing philosophies and theories, because its entire purpose is to take who a person is and work with that in order to put them on a path that will bring them back to balance and a homeostatic state of being.
Okay. So you mentioned earlier, if a client comes to you for an Ayurvedic consultation, they usually have a complaint, right? They feel some kind of imbalance happening.
Yes.
So you're taking...
Or they're curious.
Or they're just perfectly healthy and curious. Probably not very often. So you're assessing the tongue, the pulse, the history, and this imbalance that they're going through. I would imagine it's also has its various factors, you know, maybe environmental or emotional or internal. How do these changing factors of our lives influence or interact with these kind of primary doshas that we are born with?
So the doshas are... We use them as ways to organize our information. And each part of the information that I am presented with, I can categorize as falling in one of these three areas. So I'm trying to think of an example. I can't think of anything right off the top of my head. But
I can make
as
one up.
I go through... Yeah.
Yeah, like let's say I came to you with, I had a phlegmy cold that I couldn't get rid of. You know, how would you take on those symptoms?
Okay. So I would know, I would want to know when it started, how long you'd had it, and was it phlegmy. So I'm probably looking in the kapha realm, right, because of the liquid and the lubrication. But if you had a cold and you had a dryness related to it, you had some phlegm, but really more than the phlegm, you had a dryness, then I would be looking in through the lens of the vata as well as the lens of kapha.
Okay.
So I would need to see some things. I would need to see if your skin was dry or if your skin was oily. I would need to know what you're eating. If you're eating ice cream every day, then that phlegm could be due to diet as opposed to something that was chronic, for instance.
Okay.
Meaning that you could shift your diet. But I'll tell you what else happens. It's the thing that I'd like to point out right here is that you look for a confluence of factors. So you take as many details as possible. And again, the details are really, really important. And then see where they land. And then you respond accordingly.
Okay, so that makes sense. So let's say I have this phlegmy cold, and maybe you tell me I need to stop eating ice cream and maybe look into some other aspects of my habits, or and so then tell me, like, what would be kind of a typical kind of group of therapies you use or that you'd send me home with.
Okay, so I would be changing your diet for sure. And also, most of the time, at least my way of functioning at this point in my Ayurvedic career, is that I give somebody three or four things to add or subtract to what they're doing. Because if someone has to make too many changes too fast, it can, in my opinion, it can be very short-lived. So what I would do, there are diets available, traditional diets that say vatas would favor these foods and avoid these. And same for pitta and kapha. So we would look at your diet and I would make some suggestions like avoiding those foods that have the same qualities as kapha. So another important theory in Ayurveda and in a prescription, not a prescription, but in recommendations and protocols, is that you want to use things that have the opposite qualities as the dosha that you want to decrease. So if you're out of balance and kapha, let's say kapha is what I would call high, you have too much kapha, then I want to do things that bring kapha back home. I want to reduce the amount of kapha in your system. So I would want you to eat foods that have different qualities from the ones that are out of balance. So if ice cream is causing an imbalance in you, say, just as a kind of a simple, easy example, ice cream is cold and dense and can promote mucousy, liquidy buildup in the body. So I would want you to do things that and eat things that would promote heat and dryness in your system, for instance. And without going into too much more detail about foods, foods are categorized in these ways as well, so that we can match what you need with the food. And you can do this in a yoga practice, for instance. If you've got phlegmy lung things going on, then I would give you a yoga practice that built heat in the body and helped get some of this out of the system. Does
Okay.
that make sense?
Yeah. So you might give me some breath exercises or some postures and then some foods. I mean, I don't know Ayurveda as I've
Yes.
admitted, but I'm in other systems. Maybe if I saw someone with a phlegmy cough, I'd say, use some cayenne or radish or, something that kind of
Yes.
opening and
Yes.
clearing. Okay. So
Yes,
cool.
exactly.
Okay.
And Ayurveda uses a lot of herbs. I use a few, but I would really go with diet and lifestyle first before I did herbs.
Okay. Yeah, so it sounds like
Because
not
it's
only.
amazing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yep. Oh, sorry. I was just going to say it's amazing what we can do by making small changes. So to go back to something we were talking about before, and this would be true, like let's say part of that kapha person's issue was slow metabolism. So they had the phlegminess and then also they felt lethargic and slow. So those postures would help for heating. Pranayama or yogic breathing practices would help build heat in the body to dispel the coldness and the lethargy. And then also time of day. The doshas are predominant at certain times of the day. So kapha is predominant from 6 to 10, whether it's morning or evening. Pitta is predominant from 10 to 2, and Vata is predominant from 2 to 6. So I would say, for instance, to a Kapha, that your strongest metabolism is between the hours of 10 and 2. This is a Pitta time of day. Pitta is one of its primary qualities, again, is hot. The others are sharp, light, mobile, mildly oily, and liquid in a certain way. And we want to take advantage of that high, strong metabolism we have. It's good for everyone to eat their largest meal during the middle of the day. But for that Kapha person that we're talking about, I would strongly recommend that so that they could take advantage of processing their food as thoroughly and completely as possible so that they have the nutrients they need in order to make these shifts in the body.
Okay. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So if you know your nature, that your nature is a little more slow-moving and heavy, and then you want to kind of cash in on that fiery time of day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. And something that we have not, we've just sort of moved around it a little bit during this conversation, is that digestion, the digestive system, changing our diet is fundamental and foundational in Ayurveda. So we use, and it's because we use the digestive system to indicate as well as to guide, indicate what's wrong as well as to guide us in facilitating a change. And this is because the doshas, they reside in the digestive system. And this is the first place where we can look at in order to determine if there's something that's about to disturb the systems in the body. So the doshas are functional principles that what we would call herald in disease and pathological changes. So they announce to us when something is about to happen in the body. And when you know these signs and symptoms like we're talking about, it's before, can be before illness has started. It's just like the precursor, and you can go, oh, I've got something that's a little out of balance. And then you can work using these principles of opposites in order to bring balance back into the doshas and hopefully avoid illness or dis-ease or some other type of challenge.
Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah, both in that there kind of resides in the digestive system, which again, with Chinese medicine, there's some parallel, you know, the kind of the earth and the central. And then that you can follow these little subtle changes early on and correct them. How valuable.
Yeah. And I like it because if you can educate someone to pick up on the signs and symptoms and signals, then we can all go a long way in being very present in our own health processes and in what we need.
Okay. Wow. This is a fascinating system. I'm sure you must have really enjoyed studying it.
It's an ongoing process. Ayurveda is so...
I'm sure, yeah.
I'm sure you feel this way about Chinese medicine. It's so vast, it's so deep, and there's so much truth in it that I really do believe it's lifelong, many lives of a lot of study. But even just knowing the simplest facts, if they're presented and given to you in an orderly fashion, that you can identify signs, symptoms, and things that cause imbalances, then you can apply the opposite in order to bring yourself back into balance. So a little knowledge can also go a long way.
Yeah, and it even seems like if you already have some knowledge of foods, and you said how, you know, learning the different nature of foods, or at least some of them, may not be that difficult to take on that practice. So great.
Exactly.
So I want to tell people more about how they can work with you in a minute here, but I wondered if you have any like favorite books you recommend or websites.
If you're really interested in the theory, well, even more than that, theory, diagnoses, or protocols, Dr. Vasant Ladd has three textbooks that are very detailed in a very good way. They're very easy to read and give in an orderly fashion an amazing amount of information that you really can apply to yourself. So that's one thing. If you want a book that or authors to look for that have some basic books, Robert Svoboda. I think it's spelled S-V-O-B-O-D-A. And Dr. David Frawley, F-R-A-W-L-E-Y. And then, of course, Dr. Vasant Ladd, L-A-D. They have co-authored books together and individually that are introductory in nature or more specific in nature. There are some books, a couple of books, and I don't have the names right off the top of my head, but for women's health. I know there's one, more than one book on women's health out there.
Oh, so, I think I'm going to look for that.
And there's some great cookbooks out there. So I apologize if someone listens to this and I haven't mentioned their book. I have to say
they're probably not listening, really, so you're probably safe.
Oh, good, because there are some great books out there and some that I haven't even heard of, I'm sure.
Okay, well, I'll list a few that you mentioned on the show notes and on our website in the blog. So our site is bridgetdanner.com. And yeah, you can kind of click on the show if you're listening on a podcast player to read more. But I want to tell people where they can find you too, because you've been my practitioner for over a decade, which is crazy. and I'll just do a testimonial about how talented you are. I think I still remember the first time we met and you kind of were chatting, and you kind of looked me up and down, and you said something like, oh, something's going on with, like, you know, your left hip and your right shoulder or something like that. And I was like, who is this person? You know, Jeevanee's so intuitive, and it's the real deal, you know, honed from really a very deep, long practice, a spiritual practice, and lots of great teachers. So you'd be very lucky to work with her. And yeah, tell us how people can find you, what you do, and where.
Thank you very much for that. I really appreciate that. My office is at Yoga Pearl Wellness Center, which is at 925 Northwest Davis, between Northwest 10th and 11th. And I can be reached through them directly through their website, which is yogapearl.com. And then I have a website that I'm revamping at the moment, but even if you went there, it would flip you to Yoga Pearl's website. And so my website is Jeevanee, JeevaneePDX.com.
Okay.
And then I can be reached by email. I'll just go ahead and give it all. Email, EIGENCSP@gmail.com. And those are probably the best ways to reach me right now, I would say.
Okay. And do you prefer to work just in person these days, or do you do any distant work?
I do actually do some distance work. And I do work, as Bridget was just saying, I work physically, and then I also work on the subtle realms. We call them the koshas in yoga. I work in those realms as well as on the gross body. And I balance the physical work I do with the intuitive work. And I validate both so that it's not just energy work, because it's very important to see how the gross body, the physical body, responds to what you're doing. The body is absolutely amazing and gives us so much information and indicates in so many ways when what we're doing is healing for it or if it isn't healing and it doesn't want it. So I honor all of that when I do my work.
Yeah, you've taught me a lot about listening to the body, which is a really valuable tool. Well, I need to wrap it up, so I just want to give you a big thank you for being on the show.
My pleasure. It was a privilege to talk to you about Ayurveda. Absolutely.
Yeah, I feel like we kind of got it. We got in there finally, and we got the theory. We got a nugget. Just gonna leave it there.
Okay.
And a big thank you to our listeners. As always, we appreciate your time, and we appreciate you subscribing the show and sharing the show. And I do appreciate you joining my newsletter on BridgetDanner.com. You'll get some free gifts when you do it, and you'll just be kind of made up to date of other happenings we have besides the podcast. I speak on some different summits. I blog. I have different, kind of off the podcast events too. So love for you to check it out at BridgetDanner.com. Okay, until next week. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.